This week on the Docs That Ads podcast, I'm addressing one of the most common objections I get to the content I make about emotional regulation and emotionally responsive parenting, that this approach will lead to kids who are mentally weak and overly reliant on emotional whims. I'm here to tell you that this approach can actually do the exact opposite if you do it right. We're addressing this concern today on the Docs That Ads podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Docs to Dads podcast, a health and wellness resource for any dad looking to actively engage with their health, the health of their children, and building a stronger, healthier community around their family. Each week, Dr. Scott, a board-certified pediatrician, will explore topics relevant to child health and how dads can be an active participant in their growth, development, and other issues that affect children and the whole family.
Welcome back to the Docs to Dads podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Scott Grant. And today, I want to do an episode about raising emotionally resilient children. This is a topic, for those of you who have been with me for a while, that we talk about quite a lot. It's a really important topic to me because I think it gets to the heart of so many of the day-to-day struggles that parents go through. And so I make a lot of content, both through the podcast and social media and those kinds of things, that encourages dads to demonstrate emotional regulation and empathy and to work to teach these skills to their kids as well. And so frequently I'll hear criticisms of this type of approach from dads or from people who are raising sons in particular, but for both sons and daughters, that this puts too much emphasis on the emotional state of the child. It doesn't set kids up for success because it doesn't focus on developing behaviors, and that the child needs to demonstrate those behaviors. So this whole approach is going to lead to kids who aren't tough enough to overcome adversity. And contrary to that common misconception, fostering emotional resilience actually does not equate to raising weak or emotionally suppressed children. And in fact, it actually empowers children to understand, manage, and express their emotions effectively, leading to higher levels of confidence, strength, and resilience. And so that's what I want to talk about a little bit today. I want to thank you for being here. If you're getting value from the podcast, I want to encourage you also to please subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcast player. And if you enjoy this episode, I want to encourage you to just send this episode on to somebody else, another dad that you know who might be struggling in this place where maybe they're trying to figure out the right approach to dealing with a kid who has a lot of big emotions and they're not quite sure how to respond to that, or they're having some behavioral issues of some kind. And this might be just kind of a door opening to this different approach that might work better for them and help them start to move in the right direction and find that connection with their kid in a more meaningful way. So if you know a dad maybe who's struggling out there who might need a little bit of help, I want to encourage you, if you find this episode to be useful or one of the other episodes, to just send that along to a fellow dad. I think that's the best way that I would love for this show to grow and try to help more and more dads out there. And of course, a 5-star review is always useful as well to help us grow the show within the algorithms of the podcast players as well. So lots of ways to support the show if you're getting value from it, which I hope you are. If you're not getting value from it, shoot me an email or connect with me on social media and tell me what's missing. Tell me if there's a particular topic that you want to hear about, hear the perspective of a pediatrician and a dad talking about, maybe something you're struggling with that you want to hear a little bit more about. Send that over to me. I'd love to, you know, have this show reflect the day-to-day struggles that dads are dealing with. That's the whole point of what I'm doing here. So please reach out if there's something I haven't talked about yet that you want to hear about. All right, so let's jump back into this idea of sort of emotional toughness and how do we develop these, getting kids to, you know, behave in a certain way, because that's usually where these conversations around emotional regulation come up, is in kids, how are they responding in those tough moments, and are they having temper tantrums, are they having some kind of outbursts there? making bad choices because they're not thinking straight because they're so overwhelmed with some of the big emotions that they might have. And none of us want that for our kids. There have been historically ways of parenting that included sort of holding in those emotions and not having those displays of emotion and sort of punishing even those tantrums or meltdowns or displays of big feelings. And the best way that I can describe this is to say that there's really no long-term, successful long-term strategy for kids or adults for that matter to navigate just around uncomfortable feelings. So when we're feeling angry, we're feeling frustrated, there's really no successful long-term way to just like step back from that emotion and walk around it without feeling it. And even in modern discussions, we're having conversations about like mindfulness, meditation, prayer. A lot of the ideas behind that is that you're bringing some of these uncomfortable emotions. You're bringing your feelings of guilt, your feelings of frustration, anger, these sort of negative emotions that can really weigh us down. You're trying to bring those to the forefront and just sort of learn to sit in them comfortably. And in the case of prayer, you're trying to pull those all the way out of yourself and pass them on to God and say, God, help me find the right path through this. But there's really no path around it. I think the thing that makes it so frustrating for parents of young kids, and this is sort of squarely where I am on the parenting journey, so I feel this frustration, is that it sort of can take a long time. And it's not something that your kids are going to get right every single time. And sometimes they're going to get it really wrong. You know, it takes a long time to kind of walk them through this. It's easier to like just sort of shout your kids down or send them to their room and lock them away forever until they can figure out how to just hold all of that in. Or sometimes it can feel out of control. You know, the other day, one of my kids had a major meltdown while we were out at a restaurant, to the point where like it felt like it got a little out of control, and I had to physically take them out of the building outside to continue our conversation because it was just too big and too much going on, and it was too big for my child and it was too big for me, and so that's what we had to do. Right. And so it can feel out of control sometimes when you're kind of in the throes of this. But I know that there are parenting styles out there, and I've heard from parents talking about the way that they were raised, where there would have been either some kind of physical punishment in the moment to sort of force my child to stop making noise and force my child to not acknowledge the things that they were feeling. And that would have been easier. But instead, the only physical thing that happened was that I did physically grab them and carry them outside so that we could continue the conversation about what was going on and move forward from there. But the way that I think about this, and especially in the pediatrician's mind frame, is developmental. Everything we think about comes through a developmental lens, which is to say that there are skills that kids have to learn, and they have to learn them in a piecewise way. Right. And so it's just like the first time your kid walks across the room, the first time they walk across the room, probably they're actually holding onto your fingers and you're bouncing them along. They're not actually doing anything. Right. And then eventually they're pulling themselves up and maybe they're taking a step or two. But that journey across the room is slow and lumbering, and they fall over a few times, and then you encourage them to get back up. Right. And then eventually they get to a point where they're quicker and more agile. And then they get to the point where they're playing floor is lava across the room, right? So there's this huge journey from like me bopping them along and them not doing anything to them jumping from couch to couch to get across the room because they're much bigger and stronger and they've learned all these motor skills. And so I would advocate for a very similar approach when you're talking about teaching kids about emotional regulation, right? It is only sort of coming through those uncomfortable feelings that kids are going to be able to then learn, like, this feeling is not too big, and I actually do have the skills that I need to navigate through these uncomfortable feelings. And one of the things that was in the interview that Dr. Becky Kennedy did with Huberman Lab that I didn't get to in last week's episode was this idea that behaviors that are manifesting themselves in your children are just emotions without skills necessary to navigate through those emotions. And when you have that skills gap, you're going to get some unfortunate behaviors, right? And so you have two options really in that way. One is to work to suppress your child's emotions so that they don't understand what they're feeling and they don't acknowledge what they're feeling and they don't trust what they're feeling. Or the approach that I would advocate for is to help them develop the skills that they need to maintain control of their body and control of their mind while they're having those emotions so that they can understand what's happening, they can trust their own experience, and then they can move forward and they can develop the skills that they need to move forward. If we can get to that place, which is the place that I'm trying to get my kids and hopefully you are with yours, like this can become their superpower. And this is actually, for my oldest, this is actually the language that I've been starting to use as we're talking about some of his big feelings, because he is a kid who feels the entire range of emotions. And that's just who he is. And, you know, part of that comes from me. Like, I'm a deeply feeling person as well. And so some of that's genetic, and I can sort of see myself in him in those tough moments and remember my own experiences at different stages of home and especially school life where I had to learn to kind of pull those things in. And I don't think I always was taught how to handle those in a healthy way. And so I feel particularly passionate about helping him. And so the language that I've started to use for him is like trying to help him understand that if he can learn to master his emotions and understand them and work through them, then that's going to become his superpower, because he's going to be able to learn to recognize those emotions and those experiences in others and help others tap into what they're feeling. He's going to trust his own experiences. So when he feels something uncomfortable, he's going to trust that that's real, and he's not going to tell himself that like he's being dramatic or he's overreacting or he's, you know, those kinds of things. He's going to trust that there's something to that, but he's going to have the skills then to navigate through it, to ask for help or to navigate tough negotiations. Maybe somebody's trying to negotiate with him and is trying to manipulate his emotions, but he won't become prey to that. Or he'll be able to keep his cool, hopefully, in the heat of an emotional sporting contest when things get tense. He'll be able to kind of keep his cool in those moments the way you want, right? The ice in his veins kind of approach. But you can't do that if you don't sort of know what you're feeling and then master that. That's one of the things that I like about this approach that I talk about, which is this balance of sort of the boundaries and the empathy, right? So that's a key to this whole experience. And one of the reasons I think that my approach and the approach of others like Dr. Beck Kennedy does resonate with some dads is because it does strike that balance, right? We live in this world of gentle parenting, right? And everything is so focused on emotional responsiveness. We're like, oh, you just want to jump, 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 even if they're like jumping all over the couches and it's dangerous or they're causing, you know, they're, you know, messing things up or breaking things or whatever the case may be, right? You just kind of let them do what they're going to do because, you know, I'm here for you emotionally, right? And it isn't balanced with this idea of boundaries or that there are some amount of behavioral expectations. That's what I really like about this. This idea that my kids' emotions don't dictate my boundaries and that my boundaries are not going to dictate my kids' emotions, right? And so one of the things that my kids have to learn is that if I say there's a boundary here, like it's time to get out of the tub, I'm going to turn the water off, or it's time to go to outside and play, we're going to turn the TV off, right? No more baseball tonight. Those kinds of things. Like, that's a boundary that I'm going to hold, and no amount of them like flailing around or being mad or those kinds of things is going to influence my holding of that boundary. That's something that they have to learn. And eventually they'll get to a place where they can hopefully express, like, I'm frustrated by that. And by the way, like, that, those are the types of feelings that you want to have. And when you fast forward through this, right, like, you may get to a place where that boundary you have to hold is hard, right? Like, they're teenagers and they want to go out with a set of friends, but there's something about that situation that you don't trust. And so you make the call that they're not going, and that's holding a boundary, right? But they really were looking forward to that, right? Or maybe it's even something outside of everyone's control, but like, they were planning to go do something with friends, but you've had a family emergency come up. So now they can't do that, and they have to come do some, you know, be with you, navigating through some kind of emergency, right? It's like outside of everyone's control, but there's a boundary that has to be held. But like, you don't expect them to be like, oh, gee, thanks. I'm really glad I'm not going with my friends, and then I have to hang out with you and deal with this like terrible emergency that's come up, right? Like, that's not typically the response. Like, there's going to be some disappointment at least, or some frustration, maybe some anger. Maybe you always do this to me. There's always some emergency that prevents me from going to my friends, right? And so they're allowed to feel all of those emotions. And then we have to navigate the idea that they're going to have their, all of those emotions are okay for them to feel, and it's okay for them to express them in an appropriate way. But there are behaviors that are not appropriate, right? And so sometimes the language that I'll use around this is like, you're allowed to be mad, but you're not allowed to hit, right? You're allowed to be frustrated, but you're not allowed to scream, right? And helping them understand that dichotomy of like, your feelings are okay, and you can express them, and you can tell me how you're feeling, and you can tell me how you want to move forward, but there are certain behaviors that are not the correct way to demonstrate those emotions, right? And so my kids have to learn that their emotions are not going to influence the way that I hold my boundary. But we also have to be understanding, like we were just talking about, that just because I'm holding a boundary for a good reason doesn't mean my child is going to understand that and be grateful for it. Like, my boundaries are not going to dictate their emotions. They're going to feel how they're going to feel. And sometimes that's going to be rational and understandable. Sometimes it's going to be irrational, and their brains aren't wired correctly quite yet. They're still learning, right? And so sometimes it's not going to make any sense, right? Like, how come I can't jump off the trampoline into the swimming pool, right? Like, what could possibly go wrong? Well, no, like, no, that's a boundary I'm going to hold, right? But they might be frustrated by that. And that's okay. It's okay for them to feel frustrated. In fact, they probably need to feel frustrated more frequently than they currently are. One of the things I did cover from that interview was this idea that period between desire and gratification has become so small in our modern era that kids don't really feel frustration very often. And sometimes it's not until they actually sit down to do something hard, like learn to read or schoolwork. A lot of times this evolves around schoolwork, that they actually have any amount of frustration at all. And they have to actually work through something between like wanting to master this concept or finish this homework and actually having it be done. We need to work to not only allow our kids to have that frustration, sometimes we might even have to like build it in artificially to their experience, because one of those big things is like, how are kids tolerating frustration? And then how are they able to move through that to get on to the next thing, right? And so it's not that we can like step around it and save that frustration for later, right? That's more likely to manifest itself in maladaptive behaviors. And especially as kids get older and into adulthood, that's where we start talking about some of the challenges with substance abuse and other kinds of maladaptive behaviors to navigate through those uncomfortable feelings. We need to teach kids from a young age that like, it's okay for them to feel frustrated. That's a normal thing that everyone goes through. But they have to figure out a way to get through that. And so we have to support them as they work through it. And it's going to take a long time in these early days. You know, I'm right there. So I get it. But you have to be patient with it, just like you're patient with your kids when they're learning how to walk or they're learning how to read or all those kinds of things. And so some of that comes down to our tolerance for frustration as well, right? Like when our kid is having a bad moment and they're throwing a temper tantrum, like you just want that to be done. Like you want it to be over quickly. The instinct that you have, even myself, when we were having this event, you know, this issue the other day, like there was part of me that wanted to like really shut that down, you know, and I knew that that wasn't the right way. It wasn't the way that was most consistent with my values. And so we took a different path. But we have to work too on our, as parents, our tolerance of frustration, right? So like you want this temper tantrum to be over. And how long does it take to get to the end of the temper tantrum? And is there something that you can do? And certainly there are ways that you can shout at your kids or hit your kids or a variety of things that will make that tantrum end sooner. But is that really the thing that's most consistent with your values? Typically not, right? The better that you're able to just sit in some of those uncomfortable feelings with your kids, the better able they're going to be to learn that it's okay to just sit in some of those uncomfortable feelings for some period of time, right? And then as you experience it more and more, and we all experience small amounts of frustration from day to day, or certainly at least from week to week, right? As you experience that more and more, the less and less amount of time you have to sit in those uncomfortable feelings to then be able to move on from them. And you figure out strategies that work for yourself to say, you know, whether it's like body related stuff, like I'm taking some deep breaths or I'm trying to feel grounded. I'm going to put my feet on the floor and kind of try to feel strong and grounded in the floor to kind of regain control of my composure, those kinds of things. Whether it's, you know, a little prayer that you say or a little mantra maybe that helps you move through those things. Whether it's realizing that like right now is not the moment to be able to do any of those things. Like you have to respond in this moment to a particular situation that requires your attention. And you say like, this is something that I know I need to deal with later. And so I'm going to set aside time later to do, you know, my prayer time or whatever to work through that. But we have to figure out how we can manage our frustration in order to help our kids do that, right? Because we can't teach our kids skills that we don't have. And the other piece of, you know, value that comes from teaching kids how to navigate these uncomfortable emotions is teaching them repair. So a lot of times these uncomfortable emotions comes from interpersonal conflict that arises between them and their siblings, you know, them and their parents, them and their friends at school, those kinds of things. And it helps them be able to process not only sort of what was their emotional state and what were they thinking about, what were they feeling, but also what was the other person feeling, and trying to teach them empathy in that way, right? Which is the understanding of someone else's emotions, right? And so talking them through, like, you seem like you were really upset. What do you think was going through your friend's mind as you were having this argument? And helping them kind of walk through, you know, the other person's emotional state. What were they thinking? What were they feeling? So that then you can kind of come to more of an understanding around that and help repair that relationship. And repair is really where the relationship magic happens, right? Because we're going to have tension in every relationship that you have, right? Otherwise, it's not really a real relationship. If there's not some tension, there's probably some codependency or something going on. If there's no tension, because you need to be able to express, like, you're two different people that are expressing your needs, and there's always, you're going to come to places where those things don't line up 100%. Otherwise, somebody's not being honest about what their needs are in the relationship, right? And so that's going to help with your kids. And so sometimes it's really easy, and sometimes it's maybe necessary in developmentally appropriate ways, that your needs are the ones that supersede your kids' needs, because you're in a place of power and you know that you have a better understanding of like what are the expectations that are on the family in terms of like, we got to get to school on time, we got to get to church on time, we got to do all these other things. Or I saw this whole thing play out and you were the instigator and your sister was just trying to be nice to you, and you weren't very kind to her back, right? And those are the kinds of things where you might try to impose a little bit of sort of your perspective, but in a way that also allows them to share what they were feeling and why they were frustrated and why they didn't want their sister interacting with them at all, for example, you know, in that situation. Creating that situation where you're developing the skills of repair also becomes really important, because there's going to come a day when your kids do something in one of their friendships or with their siblings or even with you that's not appropriate, and they need to develop the skills to be able to come to you and say, you know, I'm sorry that happened. I was having some big feelings and I kind of lost control, and next time I'll try to do better, right? And like with so many other things, the best way for your kids to learn this is from you, right? And so there are going to be moments in your relationship with your child where you lose your cool maybe, and you have some big emotions that you're not able to manage in that moment. Or, you know, even if it was started from something that they did, right? Maybe you're in a similar situation where your kid's having a meltdown at the grocery store because you told them they couldn't have, you know, another pack of candy or something like that. And maybe you lost your cool. Maybe you yelled at them in front of people. Maybe you didn't handle that situation very well. And your kids will remember that, and they will worry that you don't love them, you know, that you know, that they can't trust what they thought your relationship was. And it'll kind of tear away at some of the foundations of that, unless we come to them and we say, you know, I'm sorry, Dad had some big feelings that I didn't handle very well. And even when we're having a bad moment, it's never your responsibility as the child to control my emotions as the dad. Like, that's my responsibility as the dad. And so I'm going to work on that, and I'm going to get better, and then we'll move forward. And that is not, like we talked about last week, that is not the moment to flip it and say, but if you hadn't been so bad at the grocery store, this never would have happened. Or, but, you know, and turn it back on them, because that totally undermines the whole apology and the understanding that, like, you actually are responsible for your feelings. You're basically saying, I'm sorry, you're not responsible for my feelings. I'm responsible for my feelings, but really you're responsible for my feelings, right? And that gets very confusing for kids. Emphasizing that role of repair in relationships and being able to acknowledge when we've done something not at our best and that we need to make improvements on can really help strengthen that relationship and teach our kids the skills that they need to, down the road, initiate that repair with other people, right? Because they've seen what healthy conflict looks like, right? And they might even see you and mom having a little bit of conflict. And I think that's okay as well, as long as they also see some of the repair, right? They see the return and the love and the, you know, apologies sometimes. That can be healthy as well. So the last thing I want to talk about is self-trust. And I've alluded to this a couple of times throughout this episode, but this idea that when kids feel confident in their emotions and what they're feeling, and they feel comfortable sort of navigating through those emotions, the biggest superpower of all of that is that they can trust themselves, and they can develop that self-confidence and that strength to say, I'm feeling some kind of way right now, and I need to figure out, like, why that is. But it's not that I'm going to doubt myself and think, like, I'm being dramatic, or I'm, you know, just trying to make this about me, or whatever the case may be, the kinds of things that these kids are normally told. But it's actually a real feeling that's happening because I'm experiencing something that makes me feel a little bit uncomfortable. And then if kids can get to a place where they can trust their own experience, then they can realize in the moment that they're feeling confused, for example, and raise their hand and ask a question in class and feel confident that there's a reason that they're confused, and it's because there's some disconnect between the way the teacher is explaining something and the way that they're understanding it. And so they can speak into that confusion and try to address it, right? They can understand that they're feeling like a conversation, you know, isn't going somewhere. They're feeling heated. They're feeling like there's been some injustice, like in a sports game. Maybe referees are making calls that are going the wrong way, and that can be really frustrating. And they can then channel that, rather than in retaliation against the other team, they can channel that into just trying to up their performance and try some different tactics, because they're recognizing those things in themselves and they're able to maintain control of their body in those moments, right? And how much of that, you know, and so we sort of look at this in kids and sports and those kinds of things, like that's one of the things that if our kids are going to participate in sports, that we want them to learn from that, right? Is the ability to sort of keep their head in those moments and ideally like navigate through them and shine in those moments, right? Those are the clutch performers, the buzzer beater shots, the, you know, the bases loaded in the bottom of the ninth moments. Like those are the places where we want kids to be able to like stand confident, keep control of their emotions, not let the moment be too big for them, right? And it can feel silly, but that projects itself then even further into future success in navigating business deals or other sort of big important moments in their life. The confidence to engage in a dating relationship and put themselves out there and be vulnerable and find a good partner that they're going to have for the rest of their life, or, you know, someday to raise their own kids and do that in a successful way. There's so many ways where being emotionally intelligent and being able to trust your own experience and trust your gut will set you up long term for being able to be a strong leader, a sturdy parent, all of these things that we want for our kids down the road. But it's only through helping them learn how to navigate through those uncomfortable emotions rather than sidestepping them and trying to pretend that they don't exist. Because we're never going to be able to get through the entirety of our life without these negative emotions. So we have to learn to embrace them and understand them and use them to connect with others when we need to. Hopefully this episode has laid out for you kind of my big key points about how not only does being emotionally responsive to your kids' needs not set them up to be mentally weak and emotionally reactive, but it actually lays the foundations if you can balance it with the boundaries and teach them how to navigate through those uncomfortable emotions, teach them how to use that to repair and maintain the meaningful relationships in their lives, but then also trust their experience to know when a relationship is not good for them, when they're being manipulated or being taken advantage of or not being treated the way that they deserve, and to trust that experience and be able to get out of those situations. It actually leads them to be more likely to be emotionally strong, able to keep their head in the heat of the moment and those kinds of things, because they need to be able to navigate through those things. And when they're young, it's going to be more challenging because it's going to take them some time to navigate through those uncomfortable emotions. But just like with walking and talking and all the other developmental stages that we take kids through, if we can help them through that every time, the time they need to get through it will get shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter. And then you can have those temper tantrums that are really bad when they're 4 and 5 and 6 years old, and you don't have to have them when they're 14, 15, 16, or even worse, when they're 24, 25, 26, right? Like, in some sense, like these tantrums are coming, so choose the timing. I submit to you that the best timing to have to navigate through those tantrums is when they're very young, so that they can develop the skills that they need to navigate through some of those challenges as they get older. That's the end of the episode this week. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, again, I'd really appreciate you subscribing and leaving that 5-star review on your podcast app of choice. But again, even more important is if you know a dad who's struggling through some of these things, maybe has a kid who's one of these big, deeply feeling kids that needs some, you know, maybe needs a different approach. Maybe what they're trying the old school way and it's not really working very well, and they're looking for something different, something new to try that still feels consistent with their values and still feels consistent with how they want to raise their children and isn't just sort of this wishy-washy gentle parenting nonsense, but actually does find this balance between the boundaries and the emotional responsiveness, send them this episode. Maybe this is a nice introduction to sort of the pros and cons of this approach, and hopefully it will be helpful to them. I want to say thanks, as always, to Phil Raban for editing the show, making it sound good for you. Every week, he's been such a great partner through this journey, and I'm really grateful for him being part of this with me. I want to remind you that what you do as a dad matters. Keep building healthier dads, happier kids, and stronger communities. Thanks so much.
The information included in this podcast and other Docs to Dads platforms is intended for your education and entertainment only. It is not intended as medical advice and should not replace a relationship with a primary care pediatrician or other provider who will give the most appropriate recommendations for your individual situation.